Now he was up against the limits imposed on him by circumstance, and it galled him. He considered storming the control room, turning the ship around, setting a course for Hala, for Titan, for anywhere, really. But there were loyalists to contend with. And besides, Thanos had no idea how to pilot a ship like the Golden Berth. Lastly, he considered outright escape. Every day, while cleaning, he scoured the ship for signs of life pods or other vessels, for equipment he could use. Nothing. No ejectables. None of the spacesuits fit him, and they were all of dubious integrity in any event. His lordship was a dullard and a crank, but he was ineluctably in charge. There was nothing Thanos could do in his current predicament. He knew he had no choice but to play along for the time being. For the time being.
If there is nothing I can do in my current predicament, then I will have to change the predicament,
he realized.
And this will call for drastic measures.
Night and day had only abstract meanings on a wheel ship, but the crew did attempt to simulate them. Unfortunately, given the panoply of worlds from which the crew hailed, no one could agree on exactly how long a night or a day was supposed to be. So sometimes the days would be 24 hours long, bisected into day and night. Other times, a night would last 30 hours or more, or a day would go on for a week, or there would be 3 hours of darkness, followed by 16 hours of middling, murky dawn, followed by a gray twilight of 10 or more hours. It was maddening, until eventually Thanos learned to ignore light and dark altogether. He was sleeping during an actual period of darkness during his 5th week aboard the Golden Berth, when something woke him from a deep, dreamless sleep. He lay there in his bunk for a moment, listening, hearing only silence. But there was something wrong about the silence. Something lurked within it. An opportunity, perhaps.
"What's happened?"
he asked aloud, not expecting an answer.
"The engines have stopped,"
Ja told him, already awake and sitting upright.
"We're adrift."
The silence. He thought of the silent Curiums on Titan, but that led him to painful memories of Gwynth and Cinta, so he shoved his attention back to the present. He'd become as accustomed to the thrum of the engines as to the chill of the metal collar he wore, and now the sound was gone. There was no atmosphere in space, and thus no friction to slow and stop the Golden Berth. Inertia would keep the wheel turning, though eventually internal pressure would slow it down and gravity would become a memory. But more important, without its engines running, there was no way for the ship to accelerate when necessary or to maneuver. It would simply continue at its present course and speed until something got in the way, like a planet or a star. Without engines, they'd be unable to resist the gravitational pull of most celestial objects. They would crash and die.
"I have no intention of dying,"
Thanos rumbled, swinging his legs out of bed.
"Who said anything about dying?"
Cha sat on the upper bunk, legs crossed, arms extended, palms up. His eyes were closed. He was meditating.
"The universe did not put us on this ship and fling us into the void so we could die."
"That sounds like exactly why the universe would put us on this ship and fling us into the void,"
Thanos pointed out, pulling on his clothes.
"You believing your fate is larger than a silent, meaningless death does not mean physics will stop working to kill you."
"You don't need to believe in the universe's plans for you, Thanos. The flowers grow regardless."
"A comfort to a man trapped in a rusting hulk of a ship with no way to maneuver,"
Thanos said, and wrestled open the ancient, malfunctioning door. He managed to slam it shut behind him before Cha Regor could spew out more nonsense. In his time on the Golden Berth, Thanos had almost unconsciously come to like Cha. His confidence in the idea of an almost irrationally benign universe, on the other hand, rankled. Most of what Cha attributed to fate or general goodness flew in the face of the logic, reason, and science upon which Thanos had built his life. a regrettable flaw in an otherwise good companion. He stomped through the corridors. He found the engine room, where Demla stood, scratching his head, peering at a flickering, static-filled readout. The ship was so old that all its controls were two-dimensional, screens and touchpads. No interactive holograms. Demla was a minor engineering flunky who monitored the engines and was authorized to do no more than bellow for help if anything went wrong. With him was Guga, the chief engineer. As best Thanos could tell, Guga'd gotten the job because he happened to be nearby when the last chief engineer died. His lordship made do with the resources at hand. Speaking of his lordship, he was there as well, standing imperiously in his velvet cloak, bare-chested and wearing a pair of unflatteringly tight underpants. As always, Robo stood right next to him, ready to use the collar remote to brain-freeze anyone who looked at his lordship with even the slightest disrespect. "I don't want a primer on engine physics," his lordship was saying to a cowering Guga, one eye throbbing through a rainbow of colors. "I just want you to start the engines again. We have hundreds of light-years to go, and it's going to take more than the 3 centuries I've allotted if we don't have engines. My plan requires meticulous timing. If we're off by a few decades, I have to start all over again." Guga bobbed his head.
"I understand, my lord, but we've run dry. As best I can tell, we're too far from any stars for our solar sails to pick up sunlight."
"Then find some stars," his lordship railed. "We're in space! It's filled with stars!"
"But we're in the Raven's Sweep, my lord. There are no stars here."
"That's why it's called the Raven's Sweep,"
Demla added helpfully.
"No kidding,"
screamed Bluko.
"Shut that thing up,"
his lordship growled, pointing to Bluko.
"Or I'll have it shape-shifted into a turd and flushed."
"Flush this,"
Bluko began, cut off when Demla slapped a hand over his beak.
"I know why it's called the Raven's Sweep," his lordship went on. "But there have to be stars somewhere. I can see them out the damned portholes."
"Those stars are too distant for our solar sails to capture any of their energy, my lord."
Guga paused.
"Please don't kill me."
"Why would I kill you?"
his lordship asked.
"You're the only one who understands the engines. Don't be an idiot. You're indispensable."
He turned to Robo.
"I'm going back to sleep. If this imbecile doesn't have the engines running in, say, 2 hours, give him a headache that'll make him piss his pants and wish he had died in the womb."
"Got it,"
Robo said, as Guga whimpered. His lordship turned to leave and did a double take at the sight of Thanos lurking in the doorway.
"What are you doing here?"
he demanded. Thanos ignored him and directed a question over his shoulder at Guga.
"Is the hydrogen scoop functional?"
Most vessels that could achieve anything close to the speed of light possessed a hydrogen scoop, designed to gather stray hydrogen atoms from the space before the ship. Space wasn't a perfect vacuum, and at near light speed, even an atom could be catastrophic in a collision.
Completely functional,
the engineer stuttered, flickering a terrified side eye at his lordship.
My lord?
His lordship stroked the loose waddle of flesh hanging from his jawline.
"Do you have any other questions, Thanos? Or are you just here to banter about hydrogen scoops?"
"I have some thoughts on our predicament," Thanos allowed. "May I?"
He gestured to the control board. Guga swallowed hard and looked over at his lordship, who nodded. Thanos squeezed his bulk behind the control board. He studied it for a moment and found himself gesturing in midair for controls that weren't there. After a moment's confusion, he instead tried tapping directly on the screen before him. That worked.
"Huzzah!"
his lordship chortled.
"Victory!"
Thanos ignored the jibe and the nervous laughter of the others. He quickly scanned the region, just on the off chance that Guga was an idiot who'd missed something. Turned out Guga was not an idiot. At least, not in this matter. There were, in fact, no stars within range. No sane or competent ship's captain would have ordered a trek through the Raven's Sweep without first being certain of having sufficient fuel to get through. His lordship, obviously, was neither sane nor competent. Still, his lordship's fate was inextricably intertwined with Thanos's, for now. So he had no choice but to figure out how to get out of this predicament. Either that or spend the rest of his life drifting aimlessly through the Raven's Sweep. As he became more comfortable with the machinery at his fingertips, he found it easier to formulate a plan. The Golden Birth was ancient and decrepit, but it had enough usable, functioning tech that he began to perceive the outlines of a way forward.
"There are no stars," he began.
"I salute you, Admiral Obvious,"
his lordship crowed, and then nearly collapsed in a fit of coughing and expectorating. Demla, Guga, and Robo all rushed to his side.
"No stars,"
Thanos continued, repressing his glee at the savage wheezing that had cut off his lordship's mockery.
"But there is an energy source nearby. A magnetar."
A magnetar was a hyper-dense neutron star that emitted no light, but did emit strong magnetic fields. There was one 4 light days from their present position. Magnetars did not last long, only about 10,000 years, so they were incredibly lucky that this one was active.
"We can modify the hydrogen scoop," he told them, "to collect gamma radiation. It's a simple enough procedure."
The hydrogen scoop not only gathered up stray hydrogen atoms, it also directed them to the ship's internal fusion reactor, where they could be mashed together to create energy. Guga left his lordship's side and joined Thanos at the control board.
"Well, yeah, but that magnetar isn't emitting any gamma radiation."
"It will," Thanos said. "We can use our defensive shields to create an overlapping series of magnetic pulses that will mimic the magnetar's interior magnetic fields,"
Guga exclaimed, his excitement growing. He hip-checked Thanos to shove him away from the controls, but Thanos was 3 times Guga's size and didn't budge.
"The result will be a starquake on the surface of the magnetar, which will throw off massive amounts of gamma radiation. We can capture it and use it to power the ship. But we'll need to have our timing down precisely. The starquake could last as little as 10 milliseconds.
Guga pretended to double-check Thanos' math, nodding very seriously and grunting portentously as he skimmed through the numbers on the screen before him. When he was finished, he looked up at his lordship eagerly. Meanwhile, his lordship had managed to recapture his breath and was wiping his lips on the back of his hand.
"All I heard," he said, "was tech tech the tech to make the tech anti-tech in blah 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 11011001.
He flapped a hand at them.
"Don't bore me with petty details. Can you make it work?"
"Yes,"
Guga said immediately and enthusiastically.
"Yes,"
Thanos said a moment later.
"Good."
Both eyes turned solid pink for a few seconds, the first time Thanos had seen them match. His lordship chucked Robo under the chin.
"Kill Guga and bring me Thanos when he's done."
Guga's eyes widened.
"My lord, I have served you."
His speech devolved into a long, strung-out syllable as Robo stepped close to him. Thanos watched dispassionately as Guga clutched his head and sank to his knees, then collapsed altogether at Robo's feet. A moment later, Guga's eyes exploded, spraying vitreous humor and blood on the floor.
"S'pose I gotta clean that up,"
Demla grumbled under his breath. Thanos watched as Guga's body twitched far longer than he would have thought possible or necessary. Eventually, it stilled. Robo sniffed loudly and cracked his fingers.
"What are you looking at?"
he sneered at Thanos.
"Get those engines powered up or expect the same."
He turned on one heel and left. Demla looked over at Thanos and whistled long and low, his eyes wide with disbelief. A moment later, Bluko whistled too. Thanos sighed. Chapter 15. When the door to his lordship's personal dining hall slid open, Thanos beheld a long, scarred table with only one chair at the far end. His lordship sat there, attended to by a woman Thanos had never seen before. Silvery skin, pale yellow hair, a kerchief tied around the lower half of her face. Robo shoved past Thanos and took up a position at his lordship's right.
"Thanos!"
his lordship boomed with exhilaration.
"You marvelous lavender bastard! I heard the engine start up 10 minutes ago. Have a seat."
His lordship invited, gesturing. Thanos looked around. There were no other chairs.
"Oh, for eternity's sake!"
his lordship fumed.
"Someone get the man a damned chair. He just made me look like an idiot."
Robo and the woman exchanged a meaningful glance, then another, and another, clearly each telling the other, "You go." Finally, the woman exited through another door and returned a moment later with a fragile-looking chair, which she brought to Thanos's end of the table and placed there without so much as a glance in his direction.
"Have a seat,"
his lordship said again, with the exact same expression and intonation, as if the previous invitation had never happened. Thanos gingerly perched on a chair. It creaked and complained at his weight.
"Bring us some food,"
his lordship commanded, then did a double take when he saw that the woman had already begun serving him.
"Damn it! Wait until I give the command before you start. There's no point to the command if you're already doing it."
"My apologies, my lord,"
she murmured, bowing her head. His lordship shook his head.
"You just can't breed good help anymore,"
he complained.
5, 6 generations of them on this ship, and I think they're starting to get inbred. Some of these species aren't biologically compatible with each other, to say nothing of anatomically compatible, so you start the incest train, and it never ends well. Oh well."
He shrugged and sampled something from his plate.
"Bungling idiots make useful cannon fodder. We're going to need a lot of cannon fodder where we are going."
Thanos wasn't sure if he was supposed to ask a question at this point. The woman had just put a plate before him. The food upon it was gristly and swam in a malodorous gravy that jiggled on its own. Still, it was the most appetizing meal he'd seen since boarding the Golden Berth.
"Do you know why I had Guga killed?"
his lordship asked.
"No."
"Because he was useless to me. You found the solution, and you were able to execute it. I'd no more need for him. I have to run a lean ship, Thanos. Resources are scarce."
The food on Thanos's plate, while vile, was easily equal to 5 times his typical daily ration. Yes, scarce. Intentionally so. But this was not the time to debate economics with his lordship.
"Couldn't you have spoken to Guga?"
Thanos asked.
"Expressed your displeasure in another way, and given him a chance at something else."
"Conversation is all well and good, Thanos, but sometimes only brute force will suffice. I sense you understand this."
No, Thanos did not. His own plan for killing people had been humane and compassionate. He developed an alpha wave emitter that would quietly shut down a victim's conscious thought, then disrupt the autonomic nervous system. A quiet, peaceful, painless death. It would have been his own. It still could be, if he could only return to Titan.
"I am a man in exile, Thanos of Titan,"
his lordship was saying as gravy dripped from his lips and slid down his wattles.
"You get that?"
"More than you'd think."
"Ha! Ha! Well then, I was exiled from the planet Kilion about 300-400 years ago. I lost count at some point."
"Your people must be long-lived."
"I hope so," his lordship said. "I hope the bastards who kicked me off the planet are still alive when we get there."
"You're going home?"
This much Thanos could understand and empathize with. His lordship nodded and explained. The plan was simple. He'd liberated the Golden Berth from its previous owners 100 years ago, out by the Galactic Rim. The ship had been new then, and he'd decided to use it to return to Kilion, kill those who'd deposed him, and retake the planet. But Kilion was far, far away, and he knew that he would be dramatically outnumbered.
"I wasn't terribly popular as a ruler,"
he admitted.
"I find that hard to believe,"
Thanos said, careful to keep the mildest trace of irony out of his voice.
"And yet it's true. They didn't appreciate me, Thanos. I let them keep half the grain they grew, half the livestock they tended. And for my generosity, I was booted off the planet and cast halfway across the universe."
How did you survive?
Thanos stirred the food on his plate, and then, reluctantly, dug in. Better than usual was still wretched. His lordship waved off the inquiry and kept talking. Once he was back in space and headed home, he realized that he would need an army. Unable to pay one, he decided to fall back on the time-tested method of simply conscripting those he needed. It was working well for him, so far.
So, you provide food and shelter,
Thanos began.
And transportation,
his lordship admonished.
And a cause. Don't forget that, Thanos, a cause. I give meaning to the lives of these poor, benighted wretches.
He belched and drained his goblet.
Present company accepted. You're not a wretch. There's something almost noble about you, Thanos. When we get to Kilion, my army will conquer the planet. And then you'll all have the honor of serving me in my palace, which is quite nice.
I see. So the indentured servitude does not end with the army's victory.
His lordship sighed wearily.
Don't be dim, Thanos. Of course not. I'm going to need protection from the people we've defeated. A lot of them will die, but not all. I'll have to leave some alive to rule over, right? Think! Use that misshapen purple thing on your shoulders for something other than supporting that ridiculously huge chin.
Yes.
You'll like Kilion,
his lordship said airily. The gnat season only lasts a few months, and when the monsoons hit, the sky goes a lovely shade of black for days on end.
I want you to be part of my inner circle, he went on. Like Robo and Kebby here.
He jerked a thumb at the woman by way of introduction.
Run the ship's engines. Keep us going in the right direction. And you'll have a pretty good life when we get to Kilion.
Thanos said nothing.
Don't be an idiot,
his lordship said, raising a goblet.
There's no better offer for 1,000,000 kilometers in any direction. What'd you say?
What choice did Thanos have? With a grim smile, he raised his goblet as well.
Proud to serve, he said,
and drank. That was his last night in his shared quarters with Cha. The next day, he would be moved to a new chamber, closer to his lordship.
Do you think he'll bother telling me his real name?
Thanos mused, lying on the bottom bunk. From above, Cha responded,
That is his real name. Had it changed legally a while back. First name, his. Last name, lordship.
Thanos groaned.
When you think about it, Cha commented, it's really not that bad.
He rolled onto his side and poked his head over the edge of the upper bunk.
Since you're leaving in the morning and I won't see you again.
You'll see me. There's nowhere to go.
I wanted to ask you one question. May I?
You saved my life. You're entitled.
Titan's a nice place, I hear. Why would you leave?
With a sigh, Thanos turned away from Cha.
It was not entirely my decision.
Not entirely?
Not at all,
he admitted. Cha whistled lowly.
What did you do to get kicked off Titan?
Thanos thought for a long time, but in the end, the simplest explanation was also the truest.
I tried to save the world.
This did not faze Cha in the least.
Ah, I see.
Do you?
History is replete with tales of the emissaries of good sense and virtue who were disbelieved in their time, much to the woe of the unbelievers. You will find your just due, my friend. Good things come to those with patience. Flowers grow with time, not immediate gratification.
With a grumble, Thanos spat out.
Spare me. This optimistic, mystical nonsense is an egregious flaw in an otherwise perfectly acceptable friend. Why do you bombard me with this claptrap?
Cha did not answer for a long time, so Thanos rolled over to face out again. Cha's face peeked out from above. His mien deadly serious.
Because I believe you, more than perhaps anyone I've ever met, need it,
Cha said quietly.
When we came upon you, you were 10 seconds away from death.
Coincidence.
I have been on this ship for 13 years. Not once has his lordship deigned to send a rescue crew to a ship adrift. He usually either has it blasted out of space or avoids it. But he saved you.
A mere glitch of compassion.
No, Thanos. Some whisper of goodness spoke to his lordship and stayed his finger on the trigger. You came on a path to us when you were aimed elsewhere. Perhaps your exile was meant to put this all in motion.
There is no meaning to it, Thanos said with finality. The only plan is the plan we are forced to create.
Cha retreated from the edge of the bed, and Thanos heard him settling into the cross-legged position for his evening orisons.
The glorious thing, Thanos,
his voice floated down after a moment,
is this. I know in my heart that your presence here is for a reason. You disbelieve it with equal ferocity, clinging to your rationality and your logic. But no matter how fiercely you believe it, you can never prove me wrong.
Thanos opened his mouth to speak, but realized, to his dismay, that he had no rejoinder. Chapter 16. And that night, he dreamed. The dream of his coma. It came to him again. He dreamed her. She came to him. She touched him. She told him what to do.
Remember when you wake,
she told him.
Remember what I have told you.
I will,
he promised. But even in the dream, he knew that he had made this promise before and broken it. He feared that once more he would awaken and forget, that he would fail at so rudimentary a chore. This time he did not. This time he awoke with her words still resonant, still alive. This time was different. In the morning, what passed for morning aboard the Golden Berth in any event, Thanos awoke and lay in his bunk, blinking up at the bunk above him. He heard, saw, and felt Cha move above him, vaulting down from his berth to land on the floor. Still, Thanos lay still. Cha stretched, yawned, and turned on the water in the little rusty sink they shared. The rust had eaten a hole through, so they had an old helmet underneath, turned upside down to catch the drainage. Cha performed his morning ablutions, then turned to address Thanos.
You look awful, Cha said. Breathe deeply. Find your center.
Thanos gave him a withering glare.
What are you still doing here?
Cha asked.
I thought you'd be gone and in your new quarters before I even awoke.
I had a dream, Thanos said slowly, reluctantly. A recurring dream.
Such dreams illuminate the underlying structure of the serendipity of the universe,
Cha said with great seriousness.
Stop it.
No, truly. When you have a dream more than once, that is the universe speaking to you. It's a serious thing, Thanos.
Cha crossed his arms over his chest and leaned back against the sink, a perilous feat, given the sink's lack of structural integrity.
Tell me about it.
With a sigh and some effort, Thanos drew his knees up to his chest and rested his forehead against them. The dream. The damned dream. He was a creature of reason and science, not of intuition and superstition. He knew that dreams were nothing more than the brain's garbage disposal, a way for images, thoughts, and ideas that had gathered in the subconscious mind to be purged. They were nonsense, and they were useless. And yet this one seemed different.
I first had it aboard my ship when I was in my coma. I dreamed of someone I once knew.
Who?
Thanos ground his teeth.
A woman. Nothing more matters. In the dream, she's dead, yet she speaks to me.
Cha raised an eyebrow.
She whispered to me. She told me something.
Now Cha stood away from the sink, coming close, kneeling down by Thanos's bunk.
What? What did she tell you?
And Thanos lied.
She told me to save everyone.
The lie was close enough to the truth. He yearned to return home, to see her again, to make things right. But he was trapped, and no matter how much he plotted or planned, the collar and the rickety ship and the vacuum that waited outside to kill him stood implacably in his way. For the first time in his life, he could not think his way out of a problem.
Save everyone, Cha mused. A noble goal.
And an impossible one, Thanos did not add.
On the first day of his second new life, Thanos passed Demla and Bluko in the corridor on his way to the engine room. Demla offered a jaunty,
"Morning,"
and Bluko cackled madly. Thanos resisted the urge to pulp the shift blot between his hands. Today it had taken on the appearance of a throbbing globule of pus, with the mouth of a dog and the ears of a wombat.
"Engine's at full," Demla reported. "Off to Brickman fast." "Breakfast!"
Bluko howled, and Thanos ground his teeth together. In the engine room, he checked power levels, assessed the state of the fusion reactor, and commenced routine maintenance. All the equipment, every last bit of it, including the maintenance drones, was on its last legs. The entire propulsion system needed a complete overhaul, but there were no resources to perform such drastic upkeep. As best Thanos could tell, the ship's engines had another 5 years in them, and that was under the most optimistic scenario. He was beginning to think that Guga had lucked out. Speaking of Guga, there was a wet stain still glimmering on the underside of the control board. Thanos wiped it off with a resigned sigh. He'd have preferred his lordship not killed Guga, but since Guga was dead, there was no point being sentimental about it. Once someone was dead, what more could one do? His lordship put it best, Guga had no longer been useful. He had lied to Cha about his dream, partly because he was still uncertain about what it meant, but mostly because he had no desire to hear Cha excavate his subconscious for any inane pseudo-significance. And because, far beyond saving everyone, right now he couldn't even conceive of a way to save himself. He would die on this ship, perhaps today, perhaps 5 years hence. But either way, he would die here, without a way home, without a way to save the people of Titan. And because to think of her, to see her, elicited a very special sort of pain, the sort that was almost indistinguishable from pleasure. When Robo came to the engine room to check on Thanos' progress his first day, Thanos took the opportunity to attempt to gain some information about his lordship's homeworld and the trip there. He had little data to go on, and more data was always good. The more information in his possession, the better he could plan. Were there star charts to show the best route to Killian? Was there a map of the local jump gates? Most interstellar travel was performed through jump gates or naturally occurring wormholes. Faster-than-light engines were expensive, fragile, and difficult to maintain. The Golden Berth's sublight engines were far more common, though Guga had done poorly at keeping them healthy and running. He'd been chief engineer because his father had been before him, not because of any skill in the area. Thanos suspected, more like hoped, that he could find a quicker way to Killian. The planet didn't sound like much of an improvement over the ship, but it had the benefit of an atmosphere, and not blowing up. At the mention of star charts, Robo only chuckled ruefully and shook his head.
"There are charts, but they won't help you."
"Why not?"
Robo looked around suspiciously. There were other minor functionaries in the engine room, but they were busy scuttling around, patching the ever-rupturing pipes and ductwork.
"Never mind, forget I said anything."
The Major Domo wiped a bead of sweat from his upper lip.
"I have a job to do," Thanos pressed him. "I would prefer to do it well."
"We got something here called need to know," Robo said. "And you don't."
Thanos furrowed his brow. Robo knew something. More, he wanted to tell Thanos. It was so obvious. People with secrets longed to reveal them. They only needed justification.
"I am the engineer now. I have to perform the tasks his lordship wishes me to perform. If you know something that can help."
He trailed off, giving Robo the opportunity to jump in and spill his guts, which is exactly what Robo was dying to do.
You're in his lordship's inner circle now, so I suppose I can tell you.
Of course, Thanos encouraged.
There is no Killian.
Robo said it with a combination of relief and sudden shock in himself. It took Thanos a moment of confused blinking to process this statement. Even then, all his mighty intellect could produce only a whispered and stunned,
"What?"
"I mean,"
Robo said hurriedly,
"there's a planet, all right. We passed it about 10 years ago. Whole surface was wiped out. Neutron bombs. Buildings still standing, but everything living was dead and gone. Place was so radioactive that if you so much as sneezed in its direction, you'd start losing hair."
Robo patted his own balding pate somewhat nervously. For the first time in his life, Thanos said the words,
"I don't understand."
"There isn't much to understand."
"What are we doing then? Where are we going?"
A shrug.
"I don't know, honestly. He's searching for something. He won't tell me what, but it has something to do with the Asgardians and some kind of power. He says he can resurrect the planet. He just needs to get his hands on it."
"It."
Thanos realized he was gripping the control board so intensely that the rickety thing threatened to break off in his hands.
"Yeah, it."
"And whatever it is, the Asgardians have it."
"That's what his lordship says."
"I see."
Thanos detected no trace of ire or disappointment in Robo. He was apparently happy to jaunt around the universe in a death trap of a wheel ship, serving up psychic spikes as needed, all in the name of an insane infinity quest on the part of a lunatic. He was either as mad as his lordship, or a true believer, or he wanted this mysterious source of power for himself. Regardless, there was no point to further discussion with Robo.
"Thank you for the information," Thanos said.
"Just keep the ship going and point in the direction his lordship gives you,"
Robo said as he headed for the door.
"And everything will be fine."
Chapter 17. Several days later, the inevitable happened. One of the wheel ship's spokes, struck by a micrometeorite, buckled. Its dented, damaged, debris-pocked structure finally lost the last bits of its integrity. Even in the engine room, on the opposite side of the ship, Thanos felt the reverberations as the alloy hull twisted and pried itself loose from its moorings. The entire golden berth shook and trembled in space. By the time Thanos arrived on the scene, most of the spoke had twisted away from its connection point with the wheel itself. A series of overlapping emergency shields held the vacuum at bay, but they wouldn't last long. Like everything else on the ship, they were rickety and well past their functional dates. A cluster of crew members clotted the corridor to the tear site. Thanos used his size and status to bull his way through. Cha-Ragor was already there, on his knees beside a bleeding Vorm who couldn't stop thrashing.
"Stay still," Cha commanded. "I'm trying to give you an injection."
But the young Vorm was in too much pain to cooperate. Caught at the juncture of the spoke and the wheel when the tear happened, he'd been gashed across the abdomen by flying metal. Bruises formed up and down his flank, and blood gushed from his stomach. Thanos stepped over to Cha's side and, without a word, leaned down and knocked the Vorm unconscious.
"Thanos!"
Cha admonished.
"It was just a light tap,"
Thanos said.
"You punched him!"
"Now you can give him the injection,"
Thanos pointed out.
"You could have been gentler,"
Cha grumbled, easing the needle into the Vorm's arm.
"Now I'll have to treat him for a concussion, too."
"Better than preparing him for a coffin."
Thanos peered around. There were terrified crew members huddled just this side of the tear, as well as gawkers and onlookers. Just a few paces away from where he stood, the spoke twisted and dipped, sharp metal shards protruding from every angle. He could see more wounded crew members bouncing around down in the dark confines of the spoke. The ship's artificial gravity had gone wonky down there. The tube waffled and flapped out of sync with the rest of the golden berth. The wounded were being smacked off the hull and ricocheted into and off one another.
"Clear this area,"
Thanos ordered, gesturing to the crowd. No one moved.
"Move your asses!"
he bellowed at the top of his lungs. The crowd dissipated quickly, leaving only him, Cha, and the wounded.
"Those fields won't hold for long," Thanos said grimly. "We need a team to abseil into the spoke and get the wounded out. If we work from both ends, we can go faster."
Just then, a small black and white screen set into a nearby wall flickered to staticky life. His lordship's image yawned into the camera.
"How's it going over there?"
he asked.
"We have multiple casualties both within and without the spoke," Thanos told him. "But I have a rescue plan that I can execute. I'll need two teams of four each, medical assistance on both ends of the spoke."
He broke off. One of the fields crackled and spat, sparking out of existence with a flash of blue light. There was a strong, sucking wind for a moment, and then an overlapping field powered up to compensate. Still, he could see black space through the tear in the hull, and the whine of the fields told him that they wouldn't last long with the additional strain on their projectors.
"We can rescue them all," Thanos said, "if we act quickly."
His lordship shook his head.
"And risk the fields failing in the meantime, sucking half the ship's atmosphere out into the void? No, not a chance. Activate the emergency cutoff."
Thanos shot a quizzical look at Cha, who had just finished stitching the Vorm's abdomen with a spool of old heat thread.
"The spokes can be jettisoned," Cha said quietly, rocking back on his heels and staring at his bloody hands as though they were disconnected from his body.
"Jettisoned?"
Thanos glanced up and around. Sure enough, he spied explosive bolts at the intersection of the spoke and the wheel, as well as a covered slit. He figured there was the same setup at the other end of the spoke. The bolts would disconnect the spoke, and the slit would no doubt open to slam down a blast door to keep the atmosphere in the ship.
"That won't be necessary," he told his lordship. "We can rescue them."
Without waiting for a response, he stripped off his tunic and ripped it into strips, which he wrapped around his hands for protection. The null gravity in the spoke would make maneuvering difficult, but would also make it easier to move the wounded.
"What are you going to do?"
Cha asked. Thanos backed up several paces.
"Run. Jump."
His momentum would carry him through the weightless area. He would grab as many as he could, fling them to the other end if necessary.
"That's insane,"
his lordship chimed in.
"Hey, Thanos, it's the switch on your left. Just hit it and we're done here. We can't risk the entire ship for a couple of crew members."
"There are 10, Thanos said through gritted teeth. "At least."
"A couple, 10, compared to the hundreds on board. Think."
Thanos brushed aside the command. He took a deep breath and started to run. And the blast door came down so suddenly that it almost crushed him. He pulled up short at the last possible instant and managed to twist so he hit the door with his shoulder, not his face. At the same time, a cry went up from Cha Raygor. Thanos whirled around, his shoulder throbbing, and saw that the blast door had come down squarely on the Vorm's head. The skull had been thoroughly smashed to pulp from the bridge of the nose up. A fan of blood and brain matter sprayed up the lower portion of the blast door.
"Oh!"
his lordship exclaimed.
"That was the remote switch! Great!"
The screen fuzzed back to black before Thanos could do or say anything. Cha shook. With rage. With anguish. With shock. Thanos had never been good at reading people. He couldn't tell. But he knew that this called for a gesture of friendship and comfort. The most he was capable of was to lay one hand on Cha's shoulder. That was all it took. Tears erupted from Cha, and he collapsed against Thanos, clutching his hand as though it were a lifeline.
"He would have made it," Cha wept. "He would have been fine."
Thanos stared numbly at the blast door. Having been tucked away inside the ship all these years, protected and unexposed, it was in good shape. sturdy and pristine except for the remains of the Vorm's skull cavity on the lower third. And he saw. He understood. He couldn't just plot to escape the ship. For the sake of every living thing aboard the Golden Berth, his lordship had to die. Chapter 18. Thanos made a point of seeking out Kebi later that day. She had seemed, at that first dinner, to tolerate his lordship, in contrast to Robo's sycophancy. Perhaps he could learn more from her. She again wore a kerchief over the lower half of her face, making her expressions inscrutable. But when he asked to speak with her privately, her eyebrows rose in a significance that he could not ignore. They huddled in a small outlet berth for one of the escape pods that the ship no longer boasted. All of them had been used, Thanos learned, 100 years ago, when the original crew ran like hell from the madness of his lordship.
"So, you hate his lordship and want to mutiny,"
Kebi said matter-of-factly before Thanos could speak. Thanos balked. He hemmed and hawed for a moment.
"Don't play coy, Thanos of Titan,"
she told him.
"You're new here. All the newbies want to overthrow his lordship and get the hell off this death trap as soon as possible. You haven't been here long enough to have your spirit crushed or your mind enfeebled by Robo. So of course you want to team up with me, bump off the old man, and take the ship somewhere sane and sensible."
Thanos had planned on slowly and subtly feeling out Kebi, eventually revealing his plans only if and when he decided she felt similarly and could be trusted. So much for that idea.
"Is there a way to remove the collars?"
he asked quickly.
"Once they're off, we can overwhelm his lordship and take control of the ship."
She blinked rapidly, and her eyes danced back and forth.
"Why do you want the collar off?"
"The psychic spikes. Unless you know a way to get the control device from Robo."
Kebi shook her head.
"Oh my, oh, you don't get it, do you? You think the collars have nothing to do with the psychic spike. That's Robo himself. It's his power. He's a psychic projector. The collars are just an identifier, an affectation of his lordship's, really. They remind him of home."
With fingers gone numb, Thanos probed at the collar around his neck. All this time, he'd thought the collar was a weapon, but it was nothing more than an ornament. Robo was the true problem, then.
"Why is he so loyal?" Thanos asked. "He's trapped here like the rest of us."
"Some people lead," she said with a shrug. "Some people want to be led. He feels like it makes him a part of something bigger."
"That's insane."
"I never said it wasn't."
Thanos grimaced.
"We outnumber Robo. He can't possibly project psychic spikes into everyone at once. Why?"
"Why haven't we overwhelmed him, killed his lordship, and taken control of the ship?"
Kebi asked. The question was more straightforward and brutal than Thanos would have preferred, but it was honest.
"Yes."
She shook her head.
"It would be pointless. We have to keep his lordship alive."
"Why?"
"Have you ever heard of a sympathy circuit?"
He confessed that he had not.
"But I am not overly familiar with space travel."
"It's pretty simple,"
Kebi said.
"The ship is quantum paired to his lordship's heart. If his heart stops beating, the ship's engines overcycle, blowing out the ship and killing everyone on board."
She thought for a moment.
"Well, a few might survive, I guess, but explosive decompression will kill them right afterward, so there's not much point living through the blast, right? If you think the spokes breaking was bad, imagine that happening to the entire ship."
Thanos rocked back on his heels. His lordship's health was poor. On a daily basis, the man coughed up enough phlegm and sputum to fill a tankard, and those he'd enslaved seemed overly concerned with keeping their captor alive and hale. Thanos thought of how everyone perched on every cough and sneeze from his lordship's leaking, crusty orifices. The creatures who collected his sputum. For medical tests, no doubt. Now he knew why. His lordship's death meant the death of everyone aboard the Golden Berth.
"There is no way out," she told him. "This ship is the universe's most perfect prison, a rattling, broken-down suicide pact made solid, wandering the galaxy until either he dies, at which point we all die, or the ship falls apart.
At which point we all die, Thanos supplied.
Yep. All we can do is stretch out our days and hope for a miracle.
She tugged down her kerchief for the first time, and he saw that the lower half of her face was a massive reptilian maw, the jaw low-hinged, her teeth a double row of more than 100 needles, and her tongue forked.
Got any miracles on you, Thanos of Titan?
She asked.
If not, don't bother.
He lay awake all that night, partly because he had to absorb the new information he'd gleaned from Kebby, but mostly because he feared another repetition of the dream. Tossing and turning, he jumbled the facts together in his mind. His lordship's health, the sympathy circuit, the psychic spike and the collars and the dead planet Killian, which made him think of Titan and its inevitable fate, which he would do anything to forestall. And the power. It. Whatever it was. His lordship seemed to believe it was real, but his lordship was insane. Still, even the insane could be right. Sometimes. He closed his eyes. He saw his mother in her psycho-asylum, screaming that he was death, death, death. And this time, when he dreamed, he saw her again. Only she was rotting before his eyes. Her cheeks were sunken and sallow, her flesh drying.
Gwynth!
He called in the dream.
Gwynth!
But she only spoke to him the same words she always said, and then collapsed into a heap of bones and desiccated flesh at his feet. Chapter 19. He awoke to a new plan. To his pleasant surprise, the plan filled him with hope. He turned it over in his mind as he lay in bed, measuring probabilities, compensating for variables. The plan, he concluded happily, would work. It would require cunning and caution. It would require his talent for technology. It would require assistance. Most important, it would require violence, perhaps even a great deal of it. His body was capable of violence, he knew, sometimes, as when he'd towered over Alars during their furious argument. He'd felt as though his body were a separate thing, a being of its own, with its own wants and desires. And sometimes what it wanted and desired was to put its hands around a throat and squeeze. So yes, his body could commit violence. But could his soul, his mind, his heart? He was willing to kill half of Titan and himself in order to save it. Killing a few of the aliens aboard the Golden Berth to save the rest, and himself, was just as reasonable and even more defensible. He sought out Cha in the medical bay. Of all the people on the Golden Berth, Thanos trusted only Cha Rhaegor. Cha was happy to see Thanos, but Thanos had no time for pleasantries.
"Can we speak privately?"
he asked. Glancing around, Cha shrugged.
"We're alone." "Is this area monitored?"
Cha laughed.
"Paranoia? On you? A poor fashion choice, my friend."
"This from the man who walks around shirtless," Thanos reproved. "Are we being monitored?"
"Of course not. His lordship doesn't have enough trusted advisors to monitor the whole ship. Fear and self-interest keep everyone in line."
"Not for long," Thanos said,
and then told Cha what he'd learned, that Killian was a fool's errand, that the ship had 5 years left at the most, and that his lordship had no plan B. Cha took the news as well as could be expected. He gasped for breath long enough that Thanos thought he would need to resuscitate his friend.
"Killian is a wasteland?"
Cha trembled as he said it, felt around him for support. He slumped onto a bed.
"We passed it a decade ago."
"You wouldn't have wanted to live there anyway,"
Thanos said gruffly. It was the only comfort he could offer.
"It would have been better than this," Cha shouted. "Better than this damned ship, which smells eternally like refuse and flatulence because we can't vent safely. Better than eating the same 10 meals galley-staff can conjure out of whatever the food replicator regurgitates."
Cha growled and rose up, tipping the bed over. He reached for a tray of medical instruments and hurled them against the wall. For a good 3 minutes, he exercised his rage on the instruments and gadgets around him. Thanos watched passively, understanding all too well that Cha's anger was like a forest fire that could not be extinguished, but could only burn itself out.
"Breathe deeply," Thanos suggested drolly,
a part of him enjoying the sight of Cha's placid shell finally cracking a bit.
"Find your center."
When Cha punched a wall and broke his hand, his anger cooled to yelps of pain. Thanos put an arm around his friend's shoulder and guided him to the section of the medical bay that had not seen Cha's wrath. There, he wrapped Cha's broken hand in an old Healy as he spoke quietly and calmly.
"When I was fixing the engines the other day, I noticed something on our long-range sensors. An old Kalami gate, about 2 light-years out. If we shift our course, we could hit the gate and jump free of the Raven's sweep. Back to civilized space."
The Golden Berth did not have a faster-than-light engine anymore. Its warp core had burned out decades ago. Using the ship's sublight engines to approach light speed would be dangerous, but necessary if they were to get to the gate in anything like reasonable time. Cha shook his head.
"Most of the Kalami gates aren't functional any longer. Besides, his lordship would never allow it."
"I don't care what his lordship wants. I'm talking about getting us to a place where we can free the people on this ship."
"Even if the gate works, who knows where in the infinite universe we'll end up?"
Thanos snorted.
"First, it would have to be better than here, by definition. Second, the universe is not infinite. The universe is expanding, Cha. That's not a belief, it's a demonstrable fact. Therefore, it cannot be infinite, because it has boundaries."
Cha shrugged.
"If the universe is expanding, what is it expanding into? What is beyond those boundaries?"
"We don't have time for me to tutor you in astrophysics and celestial mechanics," Thanos insisted. "We have more important things to discuss."
"A lot of the more well-cared-for crew are loyal to his lordship. And you can't kill him because of the sympathy circuit. We have no choice. We have to keep his lordship alive as long as possible and hopefully find a place to evacuate to before the ship falls apart. Or he does."
"Even odds as to which will happen first," Thanos told him. "But you need to trust me. I can kill his lordship and keep the ship going. And I have a way to deal with Robo as well. Are you with me? You're the only one I trust on this ship. I need someone at my side, and you are instrumental to my plan, if you can handle a little bloodshed."
Cha didn't even take a moment to consider, staring down at his broken hand swathed in a sweaty, half-chilled Healy that had lost most of its gel.
"He's been lying to us all along. Yes, of course I'll help."
When he looked up at Thanos, his eyes shone with renewed hope and vigor.
"This is why you were sent here, Thanos. I can't abide killing, but if it means liberating all of the souls on this ship, I believe that would be for the greater good."
"How convenient," Thanos rumbled. "I'm glad everything works out for you."
"Your hardness will be your undoing, Thanos."
"I'm fine with that," Thanos said brusquely. "All the well-wishing and inarticulate hope in the universe could not have found an easier way. But I'm glad to have you on my side. I have a plan, and we will need Demla's help."
Cha gabbled in shock before finding his voice.
"Demla? Thanos, Demla is a fine, upstanding person and a kind-hearted soul, but he is as the universe found him. Dumber than a petrified turd. What can he possibly offer us?"
Thanos grinned for the first time since his exile. It felt good.
"You'd be surprised."
He scrounged material from the engine room and some circuitry from the medical bay, scavenged from the implements Cha had conveniently broken. His new quarters were no more spacious or well-appointed than his old, but they were his alone. Still, he couldn't risk working there. He was bunked near Robo and his lordship, and they had an annoying tendency to drop in and see him when he wasn't in the engine room. His lordship constantly asked about power consumption and occasionally gave new coordinates to aim for, though the coordinates never seemed to follow any sort of pattern. As best Thanos could tell, if his lordship was looking for something in the possession of the Asgardians, he was doing it by pawing blindly through mountains.